The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright, the power to create a happier, healthier life drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Hi there. Here we are with another thought-provoking show on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. You know, the Law of Attraction, in my view, encompasses everything. So tonight, the recently discovered God particles, which is what I call the zero point of creation of the Law of Attraction, will be discussed, as well as time travel. You'll be amazed how this all fits in perfectly together. We are talking with Marie Jones, co-author of This Book Is From the Future, and it has everything you need to know about wormholes, time machines, time travelers, and time slips. So get ready to beam me up, Scotty, right after these messages on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Need help realizing your dreams? As a hypnotherapist specializing in the Law of Attraction, Jules Johnson can help you to break through your critical mind into your manifested dream. Get started today by going to lawofattractiontools.com. Set up a personal Skype video or phone session. Law of Attraction Tools is there to help you turn your desires into reality. That's lawofattractiontools.com.
I am thrilled to announce our presenters on our upcoming Cruise of a Lifetime on December 13th to the Mayan Ruins. The phenomenal Lee Harris is flying in from the UK to give us channeled information right in Tulum. And shaman Stefan Wills, flying in from Spain, will be doing incredible meditations and emotional clearing work. We have one of the most dynamic speakers and self-development experts, Constance Arnold, coming in to help us release the past. And hugely popular astrologer Gene Wiley flying in as well, telling us what the stars mean in 2013. All designed to give you incredible insight and advice on how to create the best in 2013. So come aboard our high energy trip. Time is of the essence. So sign up today to get the best rates, best cabins, and best cabin mates. Go to lawofattractioncruise.com.
You're listening to Law of Attraction Radio Network, enhancing the well-being of millions of listeners worldwide. LOARadionetwork.com is heard through 25 different internet radio stations, as well as iTunes Radio, Stitcher.com, and our mobile apps. The Law of Attraction Radio Network, your trusted source of daily inspiration at LOARadionetwork.com.
Okay, I'm back. Now remember, on the cruise, it's real important to sign up before September 15th because the rates will go up and you don't want to get into that. So come and join us. Sign up before September 15th. Now I have a really wonderful statement that I read from American novelist and poet Jack Kerouac. He writes, "Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers. The round heads in square holes, the ones who see things differently, and they're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them, but the only thing you can't do is to ignore them, because they change things. They push the human race forward, and while some may see them as being crazy, well, others see them as being genius, because the people who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world, they are the ones who do so. Isn't that so true?" To all the listeners out there, have you ever been called crazy? Well, if you're listening to the show, then let me inform you that you are most likely a nonconformist. That's right. Let's take a look at who might fit into this crazy category. How about Dr. Bernie Siegel, MD, who wrote the book about miracles and medicine? Or Dr. Bruce Lipton, PhD, who broke the hold of Western medicine in medical schools by challenging the status quo with ideas that the cells respond to the thoughts of the brain? And what about Dr. Emoto, who took pictures of frozen water after it was given love or hate messages? And how about Dr. John Hagland, who did the first study of the power of collective consciousness, which actually dropped the crime rate in 1969? And what about Foster Gamble, who put together that think tank exploring the tetrahedra, are building blocks of collective creation? And what about Ross Perot, or Dennis Kucinich, or Ron Paul? These guys have challenged the status quo and have been deemed to be crazy. So Jack's statement that the people who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world, and they are the ones who do, is a true fact. So who is really crazy here? People who conform or people who do not conform? Interesting question, isn't it? How many times have you been called a new ager, and someone who's calling you that is rolling their eyes and saying, oh brother, what planet are you from? How many times did you not want to mention about the law of attraction or metaphysics or spirituality because of the strange looks you get? How many times have you been kind of fearful of being ridiculed because of your beliefs? Well, I'm here to tell you of a new community of like-minded people, and I am so hoped that you will participate. It's our Law of Attraction Radio Network blog on loaradionetwork.com. This is the place where you can be completely safe to talk, to share your comments on our show, to give your opinion, to be the nonconformist that you are. You can tell us who you would like us to interview, what topics you want us to cover, or give us some questions that we can answer on your behalf. We are building our community of law of attraction practitioners because the more we can come together, the more confident we become in speaking our truths out in public. And in doing this, this is how we collectively come together and allow more people to know about the law of attraction. It's the building blocks of the tetrahedra. We're coming together, building one on one, in which we create the collective consciousness of a huge, wonderful, prosperous, abundant, golden age. And we can do this if we all come together. So refer Law of Attraction Radio Network to your friends and families and acquaintances. Let's give them their power back and their responsibility back to create a brilliant new reality with us. So let's get on with tonight's show with Marie Jones, who co-authored the book with Larry Flaxman of This Book is from the Future. They are best-selling authors of 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon. Marie Jones has extensive background in metaphysics and cutting-edge science. Marie has been interviewed on hundreds of radio shows, including Coast to Coast with George Norrie and the Discover Channel. I am so excited to be talking about this incredible subject of time travel. Welcome, Marie, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
We were just talking. We're right down the street from each other, you know.
Small world, I'm telling you.
Who would have guessed? But now that I know that, we're going to talk more often. Marie, this book is, wow, shall I use the term unbelievable?
If you want, as long as you use it in a good way.
It is. I mean, it's like, wow, this is so cool. So it brings back the movie H.G. Wells' The Time Machine and Back to the Future. So basically you're saying that a lot of that was in the movie could be true.
Well, that's what I love about science fiction novels and movies and TV shows like Star Trek, is that they always seem to, you know, it's imagination and creativity, but the science fiction of the past always seems to kind of lead to the science fact of today and tomorrow. And I love the way that these people imagine gadgets and theories and things that, you know, later on serious science will look at and try to make it a reality. So I think that's one of the reasons why science fiction even today is so popular, because it makes us wonder, okay, what's coming next? You know, what possibly could be around the corner?
Yes. And there's a couple of implications about that, you know, where law of attraction. So did we collectively manifest this into the reality, or are we in fact reading the future? So let's touch base with that in just a minute, but I want to first go into the time travel theories. If you could explain it a little bit so the audience has a better understanding of it.
Well, there's an awful lot of deep physics and science behind time travel. What's interesting, though, is there's also a whole sort of mental aspect to time travel, where people are saying, you know, we may not be able to physically do it yet, but are we already doing it in other ways, such as in dreams, altered states of consciousness? So there's two different things. But in terms of the science, what we're trying to do is find a way to overcome the speed of light, because we can't travel through time without doing that. And the book goes into the physics about it, which takes forever, but basically we haven't done that yet. So all of the theories that we're discussing are revolved around, well, let's get to the point where we can finally breach light speed. Then could we use one of the big theories with time travel, is the possibility of what's called a wormhole, a shortcut through space-time that links one part of the universe to another, or one part of our universe to a parallel universe somewhere else, or one part of time to another, say past to the future, present to the past. So these wormholes, which are theoretical, we haven't proven they existed, would basically consist of a black hole, which we do know, we know a lot about black holes, with another black hole at the other end called a white hole, makes sense, and in between is like a tube. And to give you a real good visual analogy of it, imagine a worm on an apple, and the worm wants to get through to the other side, because maybe the apple's better on that side. Well, it has two choices. It can either crawl its way all around the perimeter of the apple, which would take a while, or it can bore straight through the middle. So that's kind of what a wormhole is. That's why it's called a wormhole. It's a shortcut. One of the other theories that we talk about, Larry Flaxman, my co-author and I, is the fact that there are a lot of paradoxes that keep us from going back to the past, because if we were to make some changes, we might alter the future. And that's one of the big ethical, moral issues about time travel. So then we get into things like parallel universes, the multiverse, alternate timelines. Is it possible that we exist in other universes or timelines where we could go back and change the past and end up with the very same future in one timeline, but a completely different one in another? So there's all these wonderful theories that theoretical and speculative physics is tossing about, but it really comes down to, we got to first find something that can go beyond light speed.
Are there think tanks right now working on this?
Oh, absolutely. And the biggest is the Large Hadron Collider in CERN, where just recently they believe they found evidence of what's called the Higgs boson, or the God particle.
Great. Yeah, that's what I wanted to touch base with you on. If you could explain that too, and the significance of that to everybody.
You know, the LHC, these big, huge facilities that are looking into particle physics. And here's the idea. If we're going to learn how to travel through time, we can't really start off with a human body or a dog or a monkey or something really substantial physically. We've got to start off looking at the quantum, the particulate. If we could do it with particles, then we could start to theorize about how to do it with bigger things. Now, at CERN, one of the things that they're doing, among many others, is they're looking for proof of string theory. They're looking for proof of black holes. Can they create one, a little itty-bitty one, parallel universes, alternate dimensions other than the three dimensions that we live in, spatial dimensions. But one of the things that they do think they found, which is so exciting, is what's called the Higgs boson. And physicist Peter Higgs theorized quite a while ago, along with a lot of other physicists, that there was a particle that was responsible for giving mass to matter. In other words, there's like this sort of, I love the way it's described as a sort of field of molasses, the Higgs field. And it's filled with these little Higgs bosons. And when matter moves through that field, it starts to build mass, kind of the way when you go downhill and it, like a snowball builds size as it rolls down a hill. So the idea would be nothing can achieve mass without this Higgs boson within this Higgs field. And determining how much mass is achieved, you have different types of particles, which become different types of objects, different types of physical things. So really what the Higgs boson represents is, as we know, because this could change 5 years from now, it's the most fundamental foundation to everything that there is, to what reality is. It's the most foundational particle or thing. Because, you know, scientists really are trying to break all the big stuff down into the most minute thing they can. They want to see, okay, where did this all begin and how does it work? So right now we can say that the Higgs is the most foundational particle that there is, and it gives mass to everything else that there is, and without it none of us would have any kind of mass whatsoever. There would be no galaxies, stars, planets, people, objects, things, what have you.
Okay, so it's the building block of our reality. So
like the foundation of putting up a house, I mean, you can't, you know, put all the cool stuff around unless you've got that basic foundation set first.
Okay, so they call it the God particle. I'm kind of confused with that. It's why they would call it the God particle, only that that's the beginning of everything. So therefore, that would be considered to be God.
Which is funny because we always think of science as being so, you know, not talking about God. But it's just a term that, you know, my dad was a geophysicist, so I really understand the mentality. I think that scientists, their goal is to find out how everything works. And it's not an offense to religion at all, because I think religion is just the other side of the coin. So calling it the God particle is simply a way to say this is as of now, because, again, progress, knowledge, always increasing. But as of now, this is the most godlike, creative source particle. We talk in law of attraction all the time about source and where manifestation comes from. And so in a scientific sense, this would be the Higgs field. The Higgs bosons would be the sort of creative force behind everything that comes out of it or is created out of them that is given mass. So I think it's just a moniker that was given to this particle to sort of describe how fundamental this really is.
Interesting. So this is what we would call source energy.
I think so. Yeah, the energy that we, the sort of invisible hidden field of potentiality that we can then create from. I mean, in a sense, that's what the Higgs field acts as. It's a creative field of potentiality that matter can enter into this field and pick up mass as it goes along and become anything, a variety of things.
So is this mass, could it be manipulated by our thoughts?
That's a wonderful question. And, you know, we've science is just now starting, this is really exciting, to try to embrace some idea or some possibility that we have something to do with all of this. And again, this comes from quantum physics and the idea of the observer effect, that, you know, the act of observation or measurement can change the behavior of a particle. Now, does that mean that consciousness is involved? There are a lot of scientists who seem to think so. And if that's the case, then are we co-creating out of this field? Are we deciding what's going to be given mass? Are we saying, okay, this is the matter that I want to give mass to? And I know that that's a very metaphysical way of looking at it, but it's something that you can definitely take from the scientific theory that's being put out there. Okay, why can we not take that a step further and say, well, this is how we create our reality?
Absolutely. And from something is happening because we have past experiences showing us that we can create our future. So something is with that consciousness out there.
I agree. And I think, again, it's the scientific community's attempt to look at their side of the coin, which is always to sort of get to the physical root of things. Whereas, you know, the flip of that coin, which could mean metaphysical, spiritual, religious, the more subjective side of the coin has experience to go on. So I really see the two as working together. Something like this happens in science, I think it's so exciting because it backs up. Well, you know, I've studied metaphysics for a long time, and it's like, oh, see?
Yeah, I told you. So let's go back with this God particle for just a second and apply it to time travel. So it is, in fact, the building block, the source energy. So how is that going to help us get to the place where we can time travel?
I think right now that's really, really vague. I've actually, after this all happened, you know, tried to Google some research to see what anybody was speculating about time travel. And the only thing that I could really find was that theoretically there might be a way to, again, in that Higgs field, to breach light speed. But it's so vague and so theoretical. I think with time travel, ultimately, the answers are going to come from determining whether or not our reality is the only one. Because say the laws of physics, there are some boundaries and limitations within our universe that we must, even though we may be creating our reality, we still may have this sort of blueprint that we have to stick to. But other universes, other realities may not have those same laws. And if there is a way that we can find some kind of connectors between two different realities, two different universes, again, a wormhole that might lead us to another place in our universe where the laws of nature might work a little bit differently, that's where the time travel theories are going to really gain more ground. I'm not real sure. And I'm going to be watching, because this is so new, to see what they're saying about the Higgs and how it might be applied. Because, you know, they're trying to apply this to everything now, but I think right now their focus is on, we got to make sure this is the real thing. And changing the standard model of particle physics is happening now because of this discovery. So I see time travel as being something that we're probably going to hear them talking about in the near future once they get a better grip on what the Higgs means for particle physics.
Wow, this is so fascinating. Now, I noticed in the book that you have a lot of sources which verify, like Michio Kaku, is that how you say his name? I love that guy. I can't just say it. Is that his name? He's in there, and he's talking about time travel. We've got Alan Wolf.
Right, Fred Alan Wolf, and yeah, these are brilliant. This is talking about time travel. How cool is that? I don't know if you would have heard about that, but you know the thing is, I mean, even Einstein and Nikola Tesla and Kurt Gödel, scientists have always looked at time travel and wondered, just as the early science fiction writers did. But I think at the time where we were at with knowledge was just so prohibitive. But now, theoretically, you know, we've got people like Michio Kaku and Brian Greene and Fred Alan Wolf and Lisa Randall and all these people talking about wormholes and the multiverse theory and the idea that we might have other dimensions and other universes where time travel could be not only possible but actually happening. Michio Kaku talks about advanced alien civilizations and theoretical, but you know, how much more knowledge would they have? It could be so exponential, the knowledge they have, even over the next 1,000 years, that Lord knows what they could be doing and already be doing. I mean, you know, I love the way he says that. I think Carl Sagan said it, actually, that it would look like magic to us what an advanced civilization might be capable of. Even other things coming from other dimensions would appear magical to us. And yet really all they're doing is utilizing the laws of nature in the reality that they exist in.
Wow. Yeah. Whoa. This is good. I love this. Now,
I think the next 10, 20 years are going to be really amazing.
Oh, yes. How exciting is this? Now, a couple of years ago, there was a couple of things that went viral, and one was about the Charlie Chaplin film that looked like a woman was talking on her cell phone, although she was dressed in that era, but it went worldwide.
Oh, yes.
Talk to us about that. Was that real or was it not?
You know, nobody can say 100% for sure, but... What we didn't really discover this, I mean, it had already been discovered, was that at the time, there was a corporation that had made, they were called Siemens. They were a telegraph system corporation, and that they had made a little, like, hearing device that people were using, and that this very well could be that she's adjusting this hearing device. You know, nowadays, hearing devices are invisible because they're in the actual ear canal. But when they're first made, think about the first cell phones that were made, how big and bulky they were. You practically hold it in the palm of your hand. So, you know, the skeptics think that that's exactly what this woman was holding, that there was nothing unusual about it. In fact, there was even a suggestion that there was that it's a particular model that she seems to be holding that's large enough and looks like it might be what's in her hand. But there's a number of these pictures and urban legends, and we talk about a few in the book, where, you know, you can't be 100% for sure, but I don't know. I mean, I think in the case that picture is so grainy. If we could have gotten a real close-up, very clear, focused look at what she had, you know, because she could be adjusting her hearing aid. And then there's another picture, too, of a man on a bridge opening who looks like he's dressed in very modern clothing. And the skeptics came in and said, no, look, we've got this proof to show that this type of clothing was available as well as these sunglasses. So, you know, we've got these urban legends that pop up all the time because I really think people want to believe what they're seeing. But who knows? I mean, time travelers could be here from advanced civilizations. And I would think if they are, they fit very much into the time that they're in.
Boy, I just, if there's time travelers, I mean, and if they're listening to the show, please get us, direct us into a better future than what is happening right now. Keep us out of the wars. Can we do that if we time travel? Can we actually go back and say, well, wait a minute, you may want to go in this direction instead of total destruction?
You know, that is probably the biggest question that came out of writing this book and thinking about it and talking about it is the more moral and ethical questions of trying to change the past to alter the future. And there have been a number of wonderful movies and books. Stephen King's book, 11/22/63, I was actually reading at the time that Larry and I were writing the book, and it was just mind-blowing because that's what it's about. It's about a time traveler who tries to stop the assassination of John F. Kennedy, realizes that if you go back and change the past, you may be indeed breaking the future. And I won't be a spoiler to anybody who hasn't read it, but it is absolutely mind-blowing and so filled with real time travel research. I mean, he really did his homework into the paradoxes. So the idea becomes, you know, you say you want to go back in time to change something, a small regret that you might have had, or just something small that you think, well, then what big deal would it be if I went back and changed this? But because of things like the butterfly effect, where we really do affect more people with our simple, small actions than we think, you might be altering not just your own future in ways that you can't even imagine, and they could be very negative, but the futures of everybody that was associated with that small change. And it really does make you think about, well, how badly would I want to risk doing that? If I wanted to go back and say, catch, you know, we have a scenario that we present in the book where somebody who missed catching a ball in Little League and ended up just feeling so ashamed and just, you know, totally felt like crap about it afterwards. Wanted to go back and catch that ball and be the hero. And then showing all the things that may have happened because of that, that could have really negatively altered his future. So it's almost like leave well enough alone and don't go mess with the past. And it's just so funny because when you talk about time travel, everybody wants to go back to the past. Not that many people want to go and see what the future might be like.
Oh, I do. I do.
I think everybody has a regret. You know, they want to go back and kiss that girl they didn't kiss or get that job they turned down or what have you, not realizing that it would have created such a completely different present and future that may have been more negative than they could imagine.
Or it could be very, very positive too. In other words, if people come back to us from the future and say, look, this is what you can do. This is your power. You can create, just through your thoughts, something totally different from where it's headed.
Exactly. That would be nice, and it would be nice if people took heed and listened to that. And it could be that people that we think of as prophets, not just in a religious sense, but sort of forward-thinking individuals, leaders, that maybe that is the case, that maybe they are from the future and they're trying. They don't necessarily want to fix it all for us, because what would be the point of living? But the warning, hinting, you know, saying, look, you have potential futures. Make sure you pick the right one. And it's up to us to really listen to those. And who knows? I mean, like you said, we could have time travelers among us. I'm sure that if they are, they're going to blend in perfectly instead of standing out, because they don't want to be, you know, put on a display on YouTube for all the world to see.
Yeah. Well, in your book, you mentioned a guy by the name of John Titor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he actually said that he was a time traveler.
Yes, yes.
And he gave details of the future, and it seems like, I mean, some of this is pretty believable that it could happen in 2015, but although there's some things that did not happen, and perhaps we recreated the future, but tell us about this guy. I just find this section so fascinating.
He is an and I think nobody still really knows who he is, but this is a man that kind of came on the scene back in the early 2000s, claiming to be from the year 2036, that he was a time traveler, started posting on the internet, and he was on Coast to Coast Radio talking to Art Bell a lot. But he said, saying that he had been sent back to retrieve some kind of IBM computer system, which, you know, people say, huh, why? from the future, why would you want that? But anyway, his whole claim was that he was here supposed to do something and then leave, but he ended up staying for more personal reasons. And while he was here, he had supposedly created a time machine device, I guess you could say, in the back of a Chevrolet Corvette convertible. There's pictures that you can find if you Google John Titor, T-I-T-O-R. You know, it seemed very complex. He was able to really describe it very complexly. Then he would start on his webpage making predictions about things that were going to happen, you know, at every point in time from, say, the next year to 10, 15, 20 years into the future. Some of it was very vague and has happened. I mean, there's one he made about, you know, there's going to be terrorist attacks or some. Well, yeah, of course, those. But other very specific things he was wrong in regards to. And, you know, a lot of people looked at that and said, well, that can't possibly be real then, because some of his prophecies didn't come true, some of his predictions. So anyway, this went on for years and then it just sort of stopped. But people can still find all of the predictions on the website. There's also the transcripts from his discussions with Art Bell on Coast to Coast Radio. There's a book that came out called John Titor, A Time Traveler's Tale. There are a couple of people that were researching him suspected might be him. But as of today, nobody really knows. But here's the interesting thing with prophecies and predictions. like you said, if you have somebody saying this is what's going to happen, they may be seeing a potential future. That potential future is not created yet until we actually manifest that potentiality. It's one of many. And I've always said this, I don't necessarily believe that anybody who sees the future or prophesizes or comes up with predictions, that they're all really legitimate, but I think some of them very well may be. And I think one of the reasons why so many of their predictions don't come true is because they're seeing potential futures. If the multiverse is real, they may be seeing a potential future in one of those universes. But with certain changes that are made by the populace collectively, we end up with a different future. So I've always been tried to be really open to that without just totally saying I can debunk this because such and such prediction didn't happen last year. That doesn't mean the person didn't see a potential for that.
Wow.
Yeah, with law of attraction, I mean, we know that, you know, potentiality, we can take what we want from that. There are different potential futures that we can create as we go along. And so somebody might be seeing one of those out of thousands of potential futures and then verbalizing the predictions. And then people say, oh, no, only 3 of 10 of those came true. So no, you're just a total fraud.
Right. But you're absolutely right. I love it when somebody says to me something that I think is, it just riles me up because it's getting me in fear. And I get so passionate then. I'm going, no, it's not going to happen in my world. It may happen in yours. And that actually starts me to manifest something better.
Right, right. And I really believe that that's, you know, I don't like to say that everybody who predicts the future or has a precognitive dream or vision are nuts, because they're not. I mean, I think they're seeing potentialities. And, you know, when people have precognitive dreams that come true, it's like, oh, wow, that was so cool. Well, we also probably have a lot of precognitive dreams that don't come true because we made a different choice that did not lead to that end result. It's really hard to say what is fraud and what is just a real genuine attempt to see a potential future.
Right, right. It's fascinating. Oh, I love this. In the book, also, you have Objects Out of Time, and there is a picture of a lady who's actually having a port?
Yes. This was really cool because Sally Richards is a really good friend of mine, and she does everything. She writes, she's a paranormal investigator, she is adept at mediumship, and I had never heard of a porting before. Now, I've heard of teleporting, you know, is making an object move from place to place. So when I was talking to her about the book, she said, well, you know, you really might want to include something about a porting. I was like, huh? Well, apparently it is literally objects that travel through time. And they, you know, during, say, a seance or some type of ritual or mediumship event, these objects will appear out of thin air, but they will have come from a different time, not necessarily the other room in the house. So she gave me, you know, this picture of a wonderful 1800 seance where an object, a key, apparently apported. And she just wrote this wonderful sidebar on some of the history of apporting, and again, different from apparitions, and just amazing stuff that not only are we looking at particles and people, but objects coming to us from other time frames. It's just fascinating. Conan Arthur Doyle, the Sherlock Holmes author, was involved in this. Harry Houdini. There's so much history that people don't know about. And I was just blown away. So I was like, you know what, write me up something. And, you know, she talks about some things that happened during the exhibition, I think it was in London, and where objects were apporting. It's just wonderful to learn that there's something going on out there that I had no idea. I mean, I knew about teleportation and the scientific aspects of that, but just a wonderful sidebar. So people that are more into the more paranormal aspects of time travel, I think will get a real thrill out of reading that.
I am loving the fact that science is marrying the metaphysical aspect. They're not saying no to anything. They're just going out to prove it exists. So their thoughts on a porting or aporting is what? What do they think about that now? Are they taking it seriously?
I think for them, by them, I mean scientists, and with the utmost respect, I think it would have to be something that they could duplicate over and over again to the point where they could literally find out, well, what physical laws are going on here? What laws of physics or nature would have you allow for a physical object to sort of dematerialize from one time frame and rematerialize in another? And again, that is totally theoretical, even though there are these people that are saying, well, it happens. And I really think that that's what science does, is it looks at something like any kind of paranormal or psychic abilities, and or even, you know, even the law of attraction. They look at it and say, okay, well, there may be a lot of subjective circumstantial evidence that it happens, but we need to know physically how this works. We need to structurally understand what's going on here. We need to know how that object got from 1822. Moved through space and time and reappeared on my dining room table in 2012. And so they're going to, you know, they're going to look at the physical, the what happens on a quantum level. How do you break down something that has gained mass to the most minute form of matter, maybe the Higgs boson or whatever, and then get it to reappear in another time frame? And again, that is something that they're just going to balk at because it's such an overwhelming challenge.
Mm. I do know that Harvard Medical School has proven that the law of attraction is authentic, and they have seen it through brain imagery studies by Dr. Sereni Pillay. And he's been on the show many times to actually say, yes, the law of attraction is real, and it starts in the brain.
I love it. And I really think that this is, and I kind of include law of attraction, every, you know, metaphysics is simply beyond physics. It's beyond the understanding of physical science, but it's a reality. And I think that, you know, you have a lot of really amazing scientific minds, Dean Radin, working with consciousness and the intention experiments that are going on, IONS, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, looking at human potential, the law of attraction, consciousness, the power of the mind.
Greg Braden, too. Bruce Lipton. Oh, my goodness. Yes, it's wonderful. I love it.
And it's becoming so much more mainstream because people are proving on a day-to-day basis that it works. And, you know, science has to say, we can't deny this anymore just because we haven't been able to give it some kind of structure, or, you know, or some kind of mathematical ratio that will describe the law of attraction. Because really, a lot of science comes down to, well, can you come up with a mathematical ratio to describe it? And if you can, okay, it's real. But they haven't been able to do that yet. You can't deny that people are having these experiences, that they are doing these things, that they are, you know, even, and I go back to things like ghosts and paranormal experiences, psychic abilities, precognition, remote viewing. I mean, these are all things that people are doing, but we may not necessarily yet know the physical causes and effects and structures of.
It's really interesting. We've had a gentleman on our show. He is an energy transmitter, and he it's Eric Altman. He actually says that he can manipulate the energy in the past as well as the future. And he is known for his remote viewing. So I think, I mean, I'm just so enthralled with this guy. He's very, very powerful, and you can actually feel the energy in you. So something is going on there, and I'm looking forward to learning more about him. Have you heard of him?
I heard the name. I'll have to look into it more. And I think, you know, this is a perfect example where, and I'm wondering, maybe, you know, the scientific community just doesn't have the funding to do all of the research that we wish they would. Take individuals like that and have, you know, set up some controlled studies and experiments so that they can start to get a grip on, well, what is happening with this man physiologically when he does what he does? Because I think that's a really big clue. Not just all about what's going on environmentally or externally to us, cosmically, quantum. It's also about what's going on in the human body, the mind, consciousness. What are the physiological things that happen before somebody has a precognitive vision, before somebody can manipulate energy to do something, before someone can teleport an object out of the room? You know, what's going on with them physiologically? And those are some things that I think we can look at in a clinical or laboratory setting. So I don't know if it just comes down to a matter of, well, scientists, you know, funding is low, so they have higher priorities to look at right now. But I kind of feel like the public is demanding more answers from the community, and that's changing face of research. There are a ton of research projects going on into deja vu. Now, you never probably would have heard about this 50 years ago because it was not a priority. And yet now, you know, enough people think that this experience is so intriguing that it should be studied, that it's happening. So I see the future being really good for this kind of research.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. I'm so excited about it. But talk about the future now. Has there been a real time machine created in top secret government facility?
Gosh, there are people who claim that, and not only that, but that they've been what they're called chrononauts, time-traveling astronauts, that, you know, we refer to some of the projects and some of the people that claim to have been involved in this research again, and they're all over the place. They're on YouTube, they're on radio, they've got big websites where they're talking about things, but, you know, the skeptics again come out and say, well, can you prove it? You know, can you prove that DARPA or the CIA or some military, secret military agency was involved in time travel research or had a, as some of them claim, had a chair-like device that you could sit in and it manipulated the electromagnetic field and could take you into the past or future? Are these stories or are these really things that have happened to real people? So we have a whole chapter on what we call time travel conspiracies. Because again, there's no proof that anybody has done this, but there are a whole lot of people that are saying that they have. And when a lot of them have stories that sort of merge and match each other, you kind of have to wonder.
Absolutely. And the bigger picture, collectively, if more people it's kind of like the 100 monkey effect. We are actually creating then that time machine. Or we're creating those circumstances of what the collective consciousness is right now developing.
I think so, too. And I think that if enough people are thinking along the same lines, like you said, it probably does open up the knowledge that exists in that field of potentiality. You know, all knowledge is always there. It's not like we're learning new things. We're just sort of discovering what's in that field of knowledge that has always existed and is always there. So if enough people are thinking time travel, isn't it funny how all of a sudden, you know, you have more people who are inspired to write movies and books and more research comes out, more TV shows. And I think that inspiration kind of comes from somewhere. And it gets into people and they start to collectively want to look at the same question. And I think this happened in the early days of science fiction, where we were struggling with trying to understand our role in the universe with space, but also time. So all of a sudden you had this explosion of novels and short stories about time travel. And now I see that happening again, where it's just sort of exploding. That was one of the reasons why we wanted to write the book. It's like it's entered the mindset of the collective again. So who knows where that's going to lead? Who knows what kind of research may come out of that? What kind of theories and new ideas might come out of that?
There's a phrase that I think everybody will remember. It says, beam me up,
yeah.
Scotty. I really think that they are working on that right now.
Absolutely, and there have been experiments with teleporting particles. And it's really interesting because, you know, everything starts out at the particle level. Obviously, it's a lot easier to try to transport a photon, you know, a light particle than a, excuse me, than a cat. But, you know, the idea is if it's possible at that level, can we extrapolate that to the bigger things? You know, if we can teleport a photon, can we later teleport a cat? So that's really where it all begins. You know, the problem is that just because we can theoretically do something at the particulate or quantum level, it really doesn't mean that we have mastered the knowledge or technology yet to be able to do it. But that's how it starts. So then you say, okay, look, we've managed to do this. Now what do we have to do to, excuse me, teleport something a little bit bigger than an atom or a particle?
Now, your book is called This Book is from the Future. So everyone is wanting to know, has this book been written in the future?
I wish, because it would have saved me a lot of
time.
Joke. And you know, it's funny. Excuse me, our publisher came up with the title, and we thought, oh, that's really clever. And, you know, the first thing people say when you tell them the title is, oh, did you actually have to write it or was it just handed to you? It's like, oh, no. But the idea is, you know, are the things that we're writing about, are they already a reality somewhere down the road? 5 years in the future, 10, 20, you know, are we imagining in this book some of the things that are coming right around the corner? Because, I mean, look at how knowledge and technology are advancing. Progress is just snowballing. It's insane compared to 50 years ago, compared to 100 years ago. So, yeah, that was kind of the joke behind that. But no, Larry and I had to do a lot of work on this book. So,
okay, well, I had to ask that. But I've got to tell, and I want to tell all of the listeners, that this book is beyond fascinating. It's something that you pick up and you cannot put down because it has pictures in there. It has all of these references. It's just amazing. And reading it, you just get so excited. Oh my God, this is better than a Star Trek movie.
Yeah. Well, I think there are going to be a lot of movies coming out and a lot of books and a lot of everything, novels and on time travel, because it's just on everybody's mind. And then with these, you know, wonderful discoveries, there was last year, there was an experiment done with neutrinos, which are invisible particles that move through us all the time. And that it looked at the time, and we write about it in the book, it looked at the time like they had been able to breach light speed. Everybody was in an uproar. I was so excited. We were just finishing up the book, and it was like, oh, my God, finally there's a particle that can go beyond light speed. Well, after we turned the book in, while we were editing, there were some things that were discovered. There were some technical glitches in the experiments that showed that, no, they indeed did not go faster than light speed. There were some problems with cable systems and tracking and what have you. So anyway, these neutrino experiments just sort of fell by the wayside. But I have to tell you, for the time that people thought that this had actually happened, it was chaotic. I mean, you know, people were thinking, oh, my God, the first two words that were on their lips, time travel. So it's only a matter of time, pun intended, to find a way around these limitations. It's so exciting when we do.
Oh, yes. It's very exciting. I'm hoping that we'll see it in my lifetime, but if not, maybe in my grandkids' lifetimes. But in any case, please tell us how everyone can get your book.
It is actually, as of July 22nd, it will be in bookstores everywhere. It's currently available online at, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual suspects. But it does hit bookstores on the 22nd.
Okay, good. Thank you so much. This is fantastic. Do you have another book coming out?
We're going to pitch some ideas on what our next project is. So right now we're just sort of basking in the time travel glow. What we want to write about next. I just had a book out a few months ago called Destiny versus Choice, which is all about destiny and free will and choice. So I, you know,
that sounds fascinating.
Great book. So we're now, Larry and I are now thinking, okay, what do we want to do next? Which is a really fun place to be because it's, again, that potentiality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But my website is mariedjones.com, and my website with Larry is paraexplorers.com, P-A-R-A. So everything that we do, everything I do, that we do together is on the websites, and people can kind of keep track.
And you have got some really fabulous books, Super Volcano, PSI Science, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain Existence of Paranormal Phenomenon, and 2013, The End of the Days or A New Beginning. Tell us real fast. It's a new beginning, isn't it?
Absolutely. We're not.
All righty.
It's a new beginning.
I got to get that book. I'm going to have to read all of these books. Truly exciting, exciting books. These aren't your normal dry read. These are exciting.
Thank you.
I love it. I love it. Marie, you've got to come back on the show.
I would love to. Absolutely.
Fantastic, because I know that we're going to be talking more and more about this as well as your future books.
Absolutely, I would love to. It would be such a pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's such a pleasure.
And to all my wonderful listeners, have a great week. We'll see you back here next Sunday on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to Jules@LOARadionetwork.com, and have a great week.